AMP Radio.
Welcome to another edition of AMP Radio, brought to you by Lavasi International. Lavasi International is bringing masculine designs to your bathroom. Lavasi is the exclusive retailer of handcrafted ceramic sink, combining a handmade manufacturing process with an industrial finish. If you're looking for something different, check out their tribal design, spike design, or puzzle design, just to name a few. Lavasi International, lavasi.co.uk. Let me spell that for you. LOVASI.co.uk. Now shipping to the United States of America and Canada. Use the code word FANGOS to receive 25% off any purchase. Now back to the show.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it.
All right.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to another edition of AMP Radio, brought to you by the AMP Radio Network. This particular show, we like to call Proteus's Prime Time. My name is Proteus. I'll be your host today. And luckily enough, I will be joined today by MMA referee. We can follow him on Twitter at Bobby Wombacker. That's at B-O-B-B-W-O-M-B-A-C-H-E-R. And let's go ahead and bring him in right now. Bobby, how are you doing this afternoon?
Fantastic. And yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Well, we've got you here. Of course, the most important thing we want to talk about today is the fact that you are returning to the Octagon at UFC 218 on Saturday, December the 2nd, 2017. And Bobby, I'm going to be honest with you, you couldn't be returning on a bigger card, but we'll get into that in a second. On this particular show, we'd like to get to know our guests a little bit before we get into the meat and potatoes of why we have them on the show. So Bobby, the first question I always ask everybody is, how did you get into MMA? What drew you to the sport that we all know and love?
Sure. Just like everybody else, you know, I watched it from the beginning, and you know, back when the pay-per-views were, you know, once every month, every couple months type of thing. And you always sit there and you think, well, I could do that. I could do that. And my company transferred me around a lot. So I traveled a lot, and I actually lived in Hollywood for a little while, and actually got a flyer for Herb Dean's course. And then I got transferred out to Salt Lake City and decided to start training to fight at Jeremy Horn's gym. And I had a cyst on my shoulder blade that I had to have surgery on, and it got infected, and they told me I'd be out 6 months and couldn't grapple, roll, do anything. So I didn't want to be out of the sport that long. So I remembered the flyer I had. I inquired about it, and within a couple months, I was in Pasadena attending Herb's course.
Yeah, fantastic. I was going to bring that up, that you took Herb's course, and tell us a little bit about Herb's course, because, you know, besides him and Big John, I think there are no better courses to take, correct?
Correct. There are some really good courses out there. I've completed seven of them, and the courses are similar, but they have differences, you know, minor differences, just because the rules are the rules, and you know, what we're trying to accomplish is the same. So there's a lot of similarities. However, there's a written portion where you got to study fights, and you got to know the rules, and you just got to know the sport. And then the second portion of it is the practical part, where you got to be able to do the perform the holds. You know, if they tell you to do an anaconda or a kimura or a guillotine, you got to be able to do it. And then more importantly, as a referee, you got to understand where the pressures are, and where, you know, what pain is inflicted at that point, and how to disassemble it to prevent any future injury. You know, if you disassemble an armbar incorrectly, you could enhance the injury that the fighter has. Whereas if you do it properly, you could prevent it from injuring any further. So it's pretty in depth, and it's not real easy to pass them. You know, you got to be on your game, and you know, to get that certification, you got to prove that you can do it.
Now, you mentioned that you did take some training. Do you think some MMA training? Do you think that particular thing helped you? That your training personally helped you to understand the holds and be able to pass the practical part of these tests more easily?
Absolutely. Without that training, there's no way someone could know what they're doing and all that. You absolutely have to get into a gym, and you got to know what's going on.
And of course, you know, getting into the cage with another person. Well, what's your thinking behind that? Because you're getting into basically a car crash with two other guys in a cage. So just give us the thinking in behind that. I know you mentioned you didn't want to be out of the sport, but what makes you want to get in there with two guys stripped to the waist about to have a cage fight?
At that point you turn to fighter safety, and that's what it's all about as a referee. You know, we're in there for nothing more important than the fighter's safety. So, you know, anytime I can get in the cage with some females or males, it doesn't matter, amateurs or pros, they know that their safety is in my top of mind, and I'm going to do everything I can to ensure that, you know, they're safe. It's still a fight. There's still going to be injuries and things of that nature. But, you know, if I conduct myself the way I'm supposed to and manage the fight the way it's supposed to go, make sure it's a fair fight, then the outcome generally is positive, regardless of who wins and loses.
Now, as an avid MMA fan, I've been an MMA fan for a long period of time, but your job always intrigues me, and especially, you know, the road to getting to what we like to call the major leagues, like Bellator or the UFCs of the world. So tell us about that journey. What is it like starting? Like you said, you get your papers from Herb Dean, you get accredited, and then what's the journey up to where you are right now, again, being able to take your second step into the octagon?
Yeah, I put a post on Facebook. It's been a couple years back, and then I put it again last year. And it's got two pictures in it. The first picture is like a local gym with maybe 100 people, and the cage is all, you know, worn down. And then the one below it is of a very large arena, and, you know, tens of thousands of people in there. And the writing says, if you aren't prepared to work in this arena, you'll never get to this arena, or something along those lines. And that's right. What people don't realize is, you know, I've done well over 2,500 fights, and you know, I've been licensed for a little over 5 years, and you know, I've spent many, many, many hours on the road. I think the first year I got licensed, I put 70,000 miles on my vehicle. You know, just driving to these events. And in the beginning, it's, you know, you're nobody. You've got a piece of paper, but that doesn't mean you've accomplished anything, or that you know, you've proven yourself. You've passed a course. You haven't been in the cage. You haven't shown that you know, your worth and your ability to keep people safe. So you know, you've got to sell yourself, and you've got to you know. Every state has a athletic commission, and it's independently run. So because I'm licensed in the state of Utah, it doesn't mean the state of Wyoming's going to give me a license. You know, everybody's run independently. So in the first couple of years, I was driving state to state, just trying to get into, let me ref one fight. That's it. Just give me an opportunity. Let me learn. Let me, you know, do what I had to do. And, you know, many, many hours. And I think my biggest year, I did 42 or 43 weekends on the road. So there's huge sacrifices, and there's a price to pay, just like for a fighter. You know, fighters don't get to the UFC by training in a gym. They train, and then they perform, and they exceed expectations, and they continue to perform, and then they get the opportunity. And it's the same way as a referee. And a judge. I mean, you know, you get an opportunity, you do your best with it, you keep fighters safe, and the next opportunity comes, and you tackle that as it comes up.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the financials, because you said you're on the road and you're putting yourself through this. I you're doing it mainly just to get the experience, because you're probably paying out of pocket to go to these different shows. Am I correct?
You're correct. And until you get to the big shows and big promotions, there's no doubt a referee is losing money. I'm at the point now where I'm not losing money, but in the beginning you lose money. There's no other way about it. Now, with that being said, there's a lot of referees that will get licensed in the state they live in, and because of the cost and because of the amount of time and effort that it takes to even get licensed in another state, you know, they only ref in their state, so they don't lose money because they may ref once every 3 or 4 months, and they're okay being on the local scene. Because you got to think about this. If you're going into another state, there's got to be a reason for that commission to use you, someone out of state, opposed to somebody that's in their state. So a lot of people don't have the patience or the energy to you know, make that happen. And but you definitely lose money, and you know, referees and judges aren't in the sport, especially in the beginning, for the money, because if that's the case, you know, they would be out pretty quick.
Right. And at the beginning of the conversation, I neglected to mention that you can follow Bobby on Facebook as well. It's exactly the same as his Twitter handle, Bobby Wambacher, and you can follow him there. So you brought up the athletic commissions, and I think one thing that's very interesting that's in my mind as a viewer of the sport is that the athletic commissions are not making it easier on you, are they? You know, they all have not adapted the new unified rules. Is that something that you have to be cognizant of every time you step into the cage? That does that make your job even that much harder to keep the differences between the athletic commissions and what rules they're following?
It does. It makes it very challenging. You know, I've reffed in now 27 different states, which is a lot. There are probably a handful that have done that many states-wise. So it's very challenging knowing what rules you're going to get into. And, you know, I know the unified rules, but every time I get to a show, and I'll do it in Detroit as well, I will ask the commission, you know, what rules are we using tonight? Not because I don't know the rules, it's because I don't know what rules their commission and their athletic you know, commission has approved. And, you know, as difficult as it is for me, because I got to get into a mindset and fighter safety, and so I got to keep everything clear and straight. You know, you got to think about the fighters. You know, fighters that are training in Wyoming and then they go to Iowa to fight, and it's a different rule set when they show up. You know, that could change their entire game plan. So as difficult as it is on an official, you know, it's 10 times more difficult on a fighter. And you know, right. I believe that, you know, they're the unified rules, and we need to get to a place where every state is, you know, putting the politics aside and, you know, using the same rules, regardless if you're in Alaska or Hawaii or Florida or New Jersey, it doesn't matter. These are the rules. Everybody knows them. And it, you know, it also can confuse fans that are on TV. Oh, he was a downed opponent. Well, not in that state. He's not, you know, so you start then getting confusion on, you know, viewership and fans. And so, yeah, it's challenging for everybody.
I've got a quick question, because this comes up a lot on our show. Do you think it's time for a commission that, you know, oversees the whole country so that problems like this don't happen, or a commission that, you know, oversees maybe the whole world as well, to make sure everybody is kind of on that same level, so that when you go from place to place to place, to country, everything is the same?
I think that there needs to be a way that when the ABC, if they're a member of the ABC, and if the ABC Rules Committee says this is a new rule, this is what we're doing, I think it should be automatically adopted in each state that this is the way it is. You know, they're a member of the ABC, they've entrusted the ABC, you know, and they've got a Rules Committee for that reason, to make sure that, you know, fighters are safe and things of that sort. So, you know, I do believe that if you're a member and they make a change, I think it should be universal at that point, because right now we call them unified rules, but it's not really unified because not everybody's using them.
Yeah, no, it drives me crazy sometimes, being a fan of this sport, because, you know, we are in the early stages of the, you know, the leather helmet stages, as some people like to say, and of the sport. And I hope in the future these things can get ironed out, because, you know, as you said, it's confusing for the viewer, especially if you're a new viewer and you're, you know, from one event to the next event, the rules are different. So, but that brings us to the reason you're on your show, on this show, because I only got you for a few more minutes. So let's get into UFC 217, Bobby. And I know, you know, when you sent me the DM on the messenger, you said you were very, very excited to get back into the Octagon. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is your second time entering the Octagon. I believe the last time was back in 2016. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, big show, a great show to be back on. What's your excitement level like?
Well, it's UFC 218, and you know, any opportunity getting to be in the cage is exciting. But when you get to be on the biggest stage, and you know, this fight card is stacked. You know, they've got some tremendous athletes on there. So I get excited for the opportunity to be in the cage with the athletes of that level, and you know, just be a part of an amazing event. And you know, I know they haven't been in Detroit for a while, so going back to Detroit is also a big thing for the promotion. So, you know, it's exciting to be a part of being somewhere different and you know, being in there with those athletes. So it's very exciting, and you know, it just goes back to, you know, the first 4 years or whatever of all the travel and the hard work, and you know, it just pays off.
Right. I do apologize. For some reason, I had 215 written down in my notes. Note to self, read off the computer. So like I was saying, big card, and like you said, big fights, and you don't get to know what your assignments are until the night of, I believe, correct? So you don't know which fights you're officiating yet, but no matter what, looks like there's going to be a lot of really, really good fights on this. And like you said, you're going to have to be on the top of your game. What is there any difference, Bobby? Is there any difference, you know, in it, pressure-wise, maybe, or the caliber of athlete, like the reffing at such a high level?
Actually, it's a two-part answer. That the first time I thought that it would be extremely different, and you know, I was really nervous, and you know, everything was crazy, you know, the night before and then the morning of, and then getting to the arena and getting your assignments. And then you walk out and you see the venue and you're like, holy smokes. And then as soon as the light goes down and the cage door shuts, there's no more nerves. It's literally just another office, another state, another cage. And at that point, it doesn't register. You know, you're just there to do a job and to keep people safe. And then you said, is there more pressure being with the higher level of athletes? And it's actually the reverse. When you get to that level, things should go fairly smooth. They know the rules. They've been in there. It's not their first time. Where it's really chaotic and hectic is when you get to the local, you know, smaller shows with the amateurs that are learning, you know, that don't know the rules necessarily, and crazy stuff happens. You know, generally on the bigger shows, you know, crazy things don't happen because the athletes are, you know, very professional. They're well trained, and they're, you know, that they know what's expected. So it generally goes smoother. So and I have done a handful of Bellators as well. So, and it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to that level, you know, you expect it to go a lot smoother.
Well, you brought up you're leading me into my next question, and quickly we'll get a couple more in, and then we'll get you to promote yourself at the end, because we only got you for 20 minutes. So is there any difference between the cages? And of course, you said you've worked in Bellator, and we know that the dimensions of the Bellator cage are completely different from the Octagon. You know, Bellator is round, the Octagon is obviously an Octagon. So are there any more challenges in that, in the fact that the cage is completely different?
No, not generally. There's a promotion that's on UFC Fight Pass from the Midwest called Victory, Victory Fighting Championship, I believe. And their cage is actually a square, like a wrestling ring square. Mm. And, you know, so there's no real difference. There are differences in sizes. You know, some of the cages are bigger than others. So before the fight, you get out and you take a look at the cage and you get familiar with the settings and the size and everything, so you don't get put in a compromising position.
Okay, well, we are swiftly running out of time. I wanted to ask you about the whole Mark Goddard, Conor McGregor situation, but I think that it may be a conversation we'll have to leave for another day. I wanted to ask you about the work that you do outside of the cage, because I'm sitting here in front of a poster of Fighting for Autism. So why don't you tell us about the great work that you do, not only in the cage, but outside of it as well, Bobby?
You know, I represent Fighting for Autism. I'm the chapter director in the state of Utah. You know, I got involved in that a few years ago. You know, it's just bringing awareness to autism, you know, giving everybody an opportunity regardless of where they're at on the spectrum. You know, just tremendous things for people who, you know, need other people to support and fight for them as well. And so that was an easy thing to get involved with. And then I'm also involved with the Lane Logan Memorial. Basically, we provide service dogs for soldiers that come back with PTSD and need that to function. So, you know, that's I don't think anybody can give back to the people protecting us so enough. So, you know, I'm very happy to be a part of that. And then I also do some work with the Boys and Girls Clubs around the country. So, yeah, I try to stay busy, and you know, I deal with children with cancer and stuff like that as well. Just trying to, you know, help where I can.
You know, Bobby, it never ceases to amaze me how overachieving most people who are involved in MMA are. And of course, Bobby, you are no exception to the rule. I wanted to thank you very much for your time. And like I said, I'd love to have you on again to, you know, to speak about any kind of roughing issues that may come up. And of course, to hear, you know, the aftermath of UFC 218, which is going down soon, Saturday, December 2nd. Bobby, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. We'll speak to you again. Bye-bye. All right, guys. Well, that was Bobby Wambacher. Again, as I mentioned, you can follow him at BobbyWombacher on Twitter, and go ahead and give him a follow on the Facebooks. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the it was just a Bobby Wombacher special. I don't have anything else planned for today, so I'm going to go ahead and put the let down with the sickness run. You know how I love that. And, you know, we didn't have a This Week in MMA this week. We didn't have one last week. That's okay. We've got you covered. Sorry, I got distracted by the drop. I wanted to leave it. The combat recap. Stay tuned for those. You guys have been loving them, so we're going to keep on doing them, for especially for these events that, you know, may not have a lot of big fights on. We're definitely going to be back to normal. We are going to have Smack My Picks up again on Wednesday, because we're still running, man. The UFC has not given us any time off at all, let me tell you what. Next fight coming up, this weekend, Friday, December 1st, we're going to have two shows. We've got Friday, December 1st from Las Vegas, Nevada Park Theater. And then, of course, Saturday, we've got the big fight that we were just talking to Bobby about, UFC 218, going down from the granddaddy of them all, Little Caesars Arena. That one's new in Detroit, Michigan. So, you'll be hearing from us a lot this week. Probably going to do a longer Smack My Picks up. Or not, for both shows. Do we have a week off? No, that's Friday and Saturday. So we'll see you guys on Wednesday for Smack My Picks Up. It's been a whirlwind. This stretch has been a whirlwind. You can't keep them track. Of course, like I said, keep your ear holes tuned to Amp Radio for the combat recap for UFC Shanghai. Your boy Michael Bisping again taking this on short notice, getting brutalized in the first round by Kelvin Gastelum. Just wanted to say, called it! All right, guys, we're going to get out of here. Thank you very much for listening. And just like that.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Kelvin Gastelum.